BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Please be aware, this podcast contains strong language. Welcome to How We Hustle with Yanni. I'm Yanni Sharalambos, an entrepreneur, content creator, business owner, YouTuber, and founder of Yannamize. In this series, we'll be unpacking the journeys and surprising stories of how some of the best-known sports stars and celebrities from the UK and around the world use the power of the hustle to achieve their successes. This is How We Hustle with Yanni.
Any modelling jobs I do, any other sort of income I have coming in, I put it all into Thames and I pay myself out of the company.
You pay yourself a wage and obviously dividends if you need to take more money.
I pay myself fuck all, basically.
Blondie is a fashion icon, skater, designer, artist, model, and entrepreneur. As a model, Blondie is currently signed to the Kate Moss Agency and has been a key face for the likes of Palace, Burberry, Valentino, and Supreme. He's also collaborated with Adidas and released four different colorways of the iconic Superstar shoe. In 2015, he launched his own clothing label, Thames, taking influence from skateboarding and British culture. Your name started buzzing with skateboarding videos. I've seen one of your videos where you got hit by the taxi. That is, first of all, how you walked away and you just jumped up like you're on a trampoline. I've got no idea, because that hit you and you just walked away. Was that adrenaline? Was you really hurt?
It did hit me, but it didn't hit me that hard, actually. If you watch it very, very closely, I put my hands on the bonnet and push myself off it and I land on my feet. There's not really much impact to it at all. And there certainly was adrenaline involved, but I got up, and because I looked fine, the general public, the surrounding pedestrians, where they would normally check to see if someone's all right, went straight to, "You fucking idiot," you know, especially the cab driver. And I just couldn't really help but laugh and move on with my life. And I walked up to the camera and checked that he had filmed it, and he had. So I said, okay, let's go. And for a couple of hours, I did wonder, having watched the footage, whether I had really seriously injured myself and the adrenaline had not yet worn off, if I had at least cracked a rib without noticing. But I hadn't. I went to the pub. I was drinking at that time. And then I went to see Matilda at Seven Dials and Theatre.
Okay.
That afternoon.
Nearly died at five. Went to see Matilda at seven.
Well, that's actually just one of many, many near-death experiences I've had. It just happens to have been filmed particularly well.
But this is part of skateboarding. Talk to me Absolutely. About your passion for skateboarding. Where did it come from? Like, how did you get into the skateboarding world?
I can't really remember when I got into skateboarding, because I can't really remember life before skateboarding. It was certainly the first thing that I actually took much of an interest in. My mum has told me that I was particularly into Lego before skateboarding, but that was about 8, 9, 10 maybe. So I was probably about 10. I think that I probably first saw skateboarding on MTV or whatever channel we get MTV.
How old are you?
Do
you mind me asking?
I'm 24 now.
Okay.
So it was on Jackass, basically, and there was a skater called Bam Margera. There is a skater called Bam Margera who was part of the Jackass crew, and he had his own spin-off shows, and he was a pro skater, and he was always friends with skaters who were on his shows. And so I suppose that was my introduction to skating, and wasn't really aware that skateboarding existed in the UK until a few years later, when I met someone on holiday and he skated for a London-based company, and I couldn't believe that there was a London-based company.
Skateboarding and then doing your own shoe brand. You're an entrepreneur, you're a businessman. And these are different hustles.
They are different hustles, but they are more intrinsically linked than you perhaps think, because I skate for Adidas. I have done since I was about 17 or so.
So as your brand grew as an individual, they were like, it makes
perfect
sense.
Well, I'm an athlete. I mean, technically, my contract with Adidas is an athlete's contract.
Okay.
And a lot of people have athlete's contracts with Adidas. It is a sports company.
Of course.
Technically.
Yep.
So what's perhaps unique about my situation is that although I have an athlete's contract, they more often get in touch with me asking for designs to do a capsule collection or a new shoe than they do get in touch saying, are you skating enough? Can you film something? Can you wear this? Take a picture and that. They trust me as a designer, as a product person, as much as they trust me as an athlete, I suppose.
Would you say you're respected in your field? Listen, we all have haters. We all have people that are jealous. But because you do so many different things, in the music industry, when you go to radio, they say, oh, you're a sellout. You were a skateboarder, and now all of a sudden, you're working with massive brands. You've got your fashion label.
I'm probably more respected outside of my field than in my field, depending on which field you're talking about. In the skateboarding field, I'm certainly one of the young ones, in that I don't think it's sacrilege to work with a fashion brand if you have some say on the creative. But then things change. You know, I remember doing a Burberry trench campaign and people were hitting the roof about it, saying, oh my God, not that he's a sellout, just saying, oh, look at this guy. He's such a poser. And then just a couple of years later, people would, and that was my best friend. He is still one of my best friends shooting that. And it's the Burberry trench campaign. I love it. You know, that's the kind of job that I would do for free. I don't do it for free, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I've got kids. Like you.
We've got bills to pay.
But that's basically my process for sieving through what's worth doing and what's not. I basically will do the kind of jobs that I would do even if there wasn't any money. And sometimes even the kind of jobs that I would actually pay or go out of my way in some way to do because they excite me. The Burberry trench campaign, for example, was one of those jobs. And yet people didn't like the fact that I did that. Just a couple of years later, I see skaters, younger skaters, who aren't sponsored skaters, who haven't gone about things in the traditional way, in the way that I have. I mean, putting out parts and skating for a company and having a shoe and that sort of thing, doing terrible, terrible jobs. And those same people who crucified me for doing something which to me is pretty respectable,
yeah,
will just not bat an eyelid. It's funny, things just change. If I had come around just a little bit later, I could have done terrible, terrible, terrible jobs and actually been celebrated for them. But then I wouldn't like myself. So
you got to be true to yourself.
Rough with the smooth. That's what you got
to
take.
You seem to be true to yourself. And like me, I get offered a lot of jobs and I pick and choose. And I pick and choose those life-changing moments that I would pay. So for example, I got a speaking part in Cars 3. I would have paid to have a speaking part in Cars 3, yet they paid me, they flew me to Vegas, they took me to Pixar Studios, and I'm just like, so you're going to pay me to have a speaking part in Cars 3, and I can go to the premiere with my kids. Where do I sign up now? Like,
those jobs do exist, and I've really, really been enjoying reading autobiographies and authorized biographies, or just biographies lately, because your heroes, you know them from their successes.
Yeah.
It's really amazing and encouraging, I think, to learn about the several year stretches where those kind of jobs weren't coming in, where your hero was just working as hard as they can, really giving it 110% to no avail. You know, there are those stretches.
It's not easy. It's not easy. You know? And when you get to a certain stage, people think, oh, it's all right for you. You drive the nice car, you got the big house, the nice watch. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, it wasn't like that. You got to see where the graft came from.
And I think it's important for young people to know that. You know, if someone becomes, for example, a viral TikTok sensation to the degree where they are a brand, they have a platform from which they can sell clothes, if they choose to sell clothes, or books, or make their own DVDs, TVs, not DVDs, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, any merchandise.
You know, then that can happen overnight for someone, and they can sustain that for even 5 or 10 years. And to them, that might feel like their whole life. To a 24-year-old, for example, for someone my age, I feel like I have had a platform for almost my whole life. Right. And so for there to be a stretch of 6 months where the kind of job that we're talking about doesn't come along feels almost catastrophic to me. So I have to remind myself sometimes, you can carry on being that fussy. You don't have to sell out. You just have to have a bit of patience and do things on your own terms and have a bit of hope, because hope is the essential component to success and happiness for that matter, I think.
I can totally relate to that, having hope and a positive mindset when doing business. But I also know that hope on its own doesn't get results.
So I asked Blondie about how he takes hope and turns it into money.
Are you clever with your money? Because you touch on the fact of, obviously, people are young. You can be a viral sensation today, make tens of thousands of pounds and not have another job for a year, 2 years.
I suppose I am clever with my money in the sense that as soon as I made enough money, I employed someone to not let me touch my money.
Okay.
So in one sense, I suppose I am clever enough with it. You know, also Thames keeps me in check in that respect.
Yeah.
Because I get paid decently, you know, more than decently, really, from Adidas. Any modelling jobs I do, any other sort of income I have coming in, I put it all into Thames. And I pay myself out of the company.
Do you pay yourself a wage and obviously dividends if you need to take more money?
I pay myself fuck all, basically.
Yeah.
But if ever I need the money, I can.
You can pull it out if you need to, and then you pay yourself.
But I pay myself fuck all as a precaution.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The entrepreneur lifestyle can look very glamorous. As for Blondie, his work with Thames means that he's very hands-on with his hustle. So I wanted to dig a little deeper into the finer details about his grind at Thames and find out more about his talented team.
You're the creative director and founder behind Thames. Describe in detail your responsibilities.
I come into work at 9 a.m. and
part-time.
I answer a couple of days a week. And then I just sleep, actually.
There's a skateboarder in you.
No. I come into work at 9 a.m, Monday to Friday. Unless there are emails that urgently need answering, I get straight into writing, which Max, the producer, can tell you all about. I'm writing something to share with him, which may or may not ever happen. But
is this a movie?
It's a TV show.
Okay.
Actually, but we'll see.
You know. Do you need a Greek Ronnie O'Sullivan lookalike?
Yeah, you can be in it.
That's it. Oh, off camera, you by the way, he said I look like Ronnie O'Sullivan.
You can be in it if Ronnie's not available. I spend the first couple of hours of my day writing a TV show, which may or may not ever come to life. And then I play pool for 15 minutes. I have a pool table in my studio.
Oh, cool.
Of course you do.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
And,
geez.
And then I sit down with Rosie, my designer, whom I give directions to. And I say, I like this idea, I like that idea. Quite specific direction. And then she goes away and comes back and shows me 10 versions of something. And I say, forget about those other 9. This is the one I like and carry on with this, please. So I sit with her and I give comments on everything really. Tiny things that you don't think about unless you're the person making it.
Yep.
You know, what button we should have, what size the zipper should be. You know, I find myself looking at 2 different dyed pieces of fabric that are almost identical. I'm sitting there for 2 minutes thinking, but that one is a slightly lighter blue. You know, that sort of stuff, which sounds very banal, but actually is quite fun for me. After having written quite intensely for 2 hours. And then at some point in the afternoon, we'll design new stuff after having done the comments for the stuff which is already in the pipeline, as it were. And that's a really standard day. I mean, work-wise, I do other things outside.
But is it just Rosie and Max that work for you?
Rosie works for me. I have a production manager. I have a COO. I have a designer. My designer, Rosie, has an assistant. And I have one person who helps me with accessories, and a studio manager as of a few days ago. So there's about 6 of us.
You're juggling a lot of things and you've got a lot of balls in the air and it's very easy to drop a few. How do you handle it all at such a young age?
I don't juggle it all as well as I would like to. Everything comes at the cost of something else. Even when I put my son to sleep, for example, I'm up there, I'm enjoying myself, I love putting him to sleep, but there's something in my head saying this is time that I would otherwise be spending putting my 2 stepdaughters to sleep, for example.
Yeah.
Everything comes at the cost of something else, and I don't skate anywhere near as much as I'd like to skate. So people ask me things like, do you still love skating? And I do. I really do. I miss it whenever I'm not doing it. I wish I was doing it right now. No offense. You know, I love skating and I miss it. Running a skateboarding company, to put it quite simply, does come at the cost of skating as much as you'd like to. And when you're not skating as much as you'd like to, you're not as good at skating as you feel you ought to be. In your head, you know how to do something, but you're rusty. You know, it's like playing piano or anything. If you don't do something for a month, you can go back into it knowing how to do it, but it won't quite work. Sometimes it does, but very often it doesn't, and you just wonder why it doesn't work, and it's because you're out of practice. I don't spin plates quite as well as I'd like to, quite as well as it might seem like I do.
Many entrepreneurs say that having children powers their hustle even more. Blondie is a new father, and I was curious about his personal experiences with fatherhood. I asked him about what advice he would give his son if he ever wanted to venture into business.
You just become a dad.
Mm-hmm.
What's the baby called?
My son's name is Eblen, but we call him Ebby.
When he's older and he's ready to go in the big wide world,
mm-hmm.
what one piece of advice would you give him?
Read, really. Because I didn't really go to school. I didn't get as much out of school as I would have had I been ready to learn at that time. As it happens, I wasn't ready to learn at that time. I was making a career out of skating, so I chose to not go to school. And for a while, I had, you know, a few years of doubting whether that was the right decision. I've always loved being a skater for a living and just being a skater, full stop. But I felt academically inferior. I don't know why. I wasn't, you know, I've never hung out with particularly intelligent people, you know, never hung out with academic types, but I felt like an idiot. One day I sort of realized that I didn't have to be at school to learn. And that in itself was a very valuable lesson to learn, because all you really need to be to learn is to be willing to learn, you know. It's certainly the case now, and it's highly unlikely that it won't be even more the case when he is our age, older, that information is readily available.
Knowledge is power, as they always say, and it is a lot easier now. Whereas back in the day it was books. Now it is literally, you go online. The problem is there's so many things that you can look at that sometimes you're not actually paying attention to learning.
I would probably actually advise him to pick up a book and to not be online, actually, because as you said, there is so much online. I mean, everything is online, almost everything. You can't actually pick something to read or watch. I actually probably would advise him to read books.
You said in a previous interview, and this, I'm similar to this, I'm addicted to work and staying up all night, and you love the hustle. You love it, yeah? Mm-hmm. When do you rest? When do you recover? When do you allow your mind to just be like, and breathe?
I rest now more than I ever did. For years, stayed up for several days and nights on the trot, convinced that I was working, but actually getting fuck all done. And now that I have a family, it's different. You know, I've always struggled sleeping. I've never seen the point of getting into bed unless someone you love and fancy very much is already in it, waiting for you. And now there is.
Well, I must
every
go.
Night. I do it quite regularly. And also being in a house full of other people who have a strict bedtime schedule, I inherit some routine, some secondhand routine from theirs.
In your exhibitions, mental health has played quite a key part. Is that fair to say? How do you manage your own mental health? And why are the arts so important in raising awareness?
So I'm very lucky that my customers, fan base, audience, whatever you want to call it, them, are young people. And as such, they tend to be people who aren't set in their ways yet. So I just bear in mind that I'm communicating with people all the time, and I try very hard to communicate messages which I think are positive, really. I mean, I might find something funny that other people find offensive, and I'm true to myself, but I, you know, I won't say that I don't find something funny if I find it funny. And if I'm wrong to find it funny, then is what it is. But, you know, I'm true to myself, but I am constantly bearing in mind that it is a responsibility to hold the attention of young people.
What's one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self?
I like my life now, and I've seen the time-travelling movies. I know what happens when you change one small thing. I like the position I'm in now, so I have to say that I probably wouldn't change anything that's happened. You know, that's led me to this place that I'm in now.
So before we met up today, I put on my Instagram that I was interviewing you today. We're doing a podcast, and if they had any questions.
You're asking for trouble there.
So the first question was, are you sexy?
Simple question, simple answer, no.
No?
No.
You're not sexy? Not bringing sexy back?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I mean, you should do a survey.
Do a survey. I'll do a poll.
You should do a survey and not share the results with me, if you don't mind.
Is Blondie sexy? And we'll just leave it up there.
Do that.
Okay, we'll do that. Right. Giuliano Taboas asked, what is the one moment in your life that you will never forget?
I'm inclined to say that the moment that I'm least likely to forget is the moment of my son's birth.
I thought you'd say that.
An unoriginal response, but a truthful one.
It's the obvious one, and I think it's the...
It was quite a big deal. It is the most natural thing in the world. It is the thing that humans have successfully continued to do for millennia. And yet, it is awesome and unbelievable and incomprehensible.
Right, Skadira Shields asks, in an ever-changing marketplace, how do you keep ahead of these changes and stay on top? Good question, by the way.
Like to know about the changes, but I don't really change that much myself. You know, for example, NFTs, I've gone well out of my way to learn about them, what they are, understand them. I feel that I do understand them, but I don't feel that they really are a suitable medium through which I can communicate what I'm trying to communicate. So, you know, really my answer to that question is to just be aware of them, but stay truthful to myself, because what's working for me is working for a reason, because it is what it is. You have to find a way of adapting and developing whilst remaining faithful to yourself. You know, I like to try to understand the changes, but not necessarily always feel like I have to move in the same direction as everyone else is moving, because to be honest, everyone else is moving in that direction. It's nice for me, even if moving in the other direction seems like a ridiculous thing to do on paper, actually sets me apart. You know, I found that with Temps throughout the pandemic, because it's been so difficult to make certain things. You know, up until recently even, it's been easier to make jewelry in Thailand than it has been to print t-shirts in Portugal. I've been forced to take these risks, which I otherwise wouldn't take, which on paper look like bad ideas. And because I've been forced to take them, I've learnt quicker than I otherwise would have what my business is capable of doing, what I'm capable of selling. You know, I might even now not have learnt that we can sell more jewellery than we can sell t-shirts, because it sounds ridiculous. You know, coming from my background, skating for Palace, skating for Supreme, really I'm from a streetwear background. Most of the people who follow me, who know about me, you know, from those jobs, from those affiliations, those relationships. So when I relaunched Thames, I thought, that's what they do. They make t-shirts in different colors. Everything they think is good enough to make, they make in 10 different colors. That's what I should do. And it didn't work for me. That seemed like the obvious thing for me to do. I thought that I would be selling enough t-shirts. I thought that I would only be able to afford to experiment with jewelry, for example, because I'd be selling so many t-shirts. But it's actually the other way around.
But that's part of being a good businessman.
You find out what works for you, and you keep on with that. And if you work in a creative sphere, as I do, you shouldn't be trying to make your work fit a certain medium. You should be finding the medium that your work fits. You know, for example, I found when I did a series of podcasts, I did 6 podcasts last year. Yeah, for the first 6 months of last year, I released 1 podcast a month. And I wrote them, they were scripted, they were quite carefully done, actually, and I enjoyed it. But what I immediately found is that I now had a medium through which I could share ideas which would simply not be appropriate to share through Instagram or a newsletter, which were hitherto the only mediums of communication which I really used. The way that Instagram is set up, for example, it would be advised to post a portrait picture rather than a horizontal one because you scroll this way, not side to side. Yeah. You know, it would be advised to post a colourful picture where someone's face is taking up 70% of the image. You know, you quite quickly realise these things. I mean, everyone's account is slightly different, but you work out what works for that medium, for the that channel. And when you start bearing that in mind too much with your work is when you're compromising creatively.
Right, this will be interesting because you touched on books earlier on. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting together a hustle handbook. So I'm asking everyone the book recommendation that changed your life and inspired you to share with our listeners. For me, it was 48 Laws of Power.
There's a book called The Luck Factor by a guy called Dr. Richard Wiseman. The gist of it is this. This guy, Dr. Richard Wiseman, is a magician and a psychologist. And he has been conducting surveys regarding people who feel lucky and who feel particularly unlucky, and pointing out the correlations between people who feel unlucky and are. You know, my favourite books are the books which don't necessarily tell me new things, but tell me things which I already knew somehow in a very articulate, succinct, sort of digestible way. So that's the book that I would suggest reading for your hustle handbook.
So what did I take away from talking to Blondie? He's a creative spirit in the very true sense. He's definitely true to himself, and his most successful hustle is authenticity. Blondie has a positive outlook and a powerful work ethic. I'm sure more success will be coming his way. You can hear and see more of Blondie on The Drop. That's a new TV show that gives a platform to the next generation of talented fashion designers. In The Drop, 10 of Britain's most promising up-and-coming creatives go head-to-head to win the chance to have their first streetwear line stocked in a major UK retailer. You can watch The Drop on BBC Three and iPlayer. If you're liking the podcast, hit subscribe on BBC Sounds to see the latest episodes. And while you're there, here's something else you might like.
I'm back for another series of Tony Bellew Is Angry. I've always been interested in finding out what makes other people tick, how do they use anger.
There was a lot of arguing in our house and a lot of shouting and a lot of kicking off. And then when you grow up in that environment, it kind of rubs off on you a little bit, and that's just who you are. I definitely had to go to anger management for a while.
We all do get angry at times. It can be something small, it can be something trivial, or it could be a huge explosion and something major. I don't know a single person in the world who's never not got angry. I think for those who listen to this, I think every single person out there can relate to it.
Tony Bellew Is Angry. Listen on BBC Sounds.